place out in the county you can't see 500 feet.
Oh. Is it a notoriously dangerous road?
This is down right by Joe Zunstein's place.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
But still.
Yeah.
Huh. And some of those driveways, I see they put right in on a corner or a hill, you know, they can't see 20 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all right. I meant to cut the article out on you that was in the paper. I think it was in the Capital Press. It was about your baseball scout.
Oh yeah, I had a couple of those.
Yeah. I didn't know that. Jeez.
I just had that's who called it, Maria right there. So that's why. We got spring training starting in a couple weeks. So trying to get everybody's visas lined up and all that kind of stuff. So.
He's got shingles hanging out all over the place.
Yeah. Gotta stay busy somehow.
We're in lots of hats, huh?
Yes, sir.
Well, rumor has it you were doing a little writing training for our state weed board coordinator.
Oh, I do a little bit of that, too. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, a little.
This time of year, you gotta go. I try to go to warm places. Florida.
Well, I'll tell you what, some of those down there, it's been tough to find a warm place.
Yeah, not as warm as usually.
Well, I'll go ahead and call the meeting to order then.
Okay.
And first order of business, review and approve the minutes from December.
I'll move with that we approve them.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to adopt the minutes. All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, same. Number two, introduction of the 2018 noxious weed list.
Yeah.
That looks like it's got your name on it.
It does, yeah. So the second page behind the agenda there in your handout, that's the proposed Clark County list. Of course, how this happens is the state produces their list, then within, you know, about 30 days of the new year, you guys review it. The Class A's and B designates, of course, are not movable. It's the Class C's that are movable, like we did last year. So if you look at this, the items that I highlighted, and there's the next page after it actually has the descriptions there.
I'm not seeing anything highlighted.
Let me point them out then. So, okay. Most of the way down on Class A, it's small flower jewelweed, Impatiens parviflora. That's new to the list. It's similar to the native Impatiens we'll have in the wetland areas. Oftentimes called a touch me not, where it'll pop towards the end of the summer. They're finding that there are many varieties that have been brought in the ornamental trade. They're all hybridizing, and this is one of the more important ones. In Class B regulated, the center column, European coltsfoot is new.
Well, we talked about that last time, didn't we?
I think we were talking about how they were looking at it, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's new on the list officially. And then towards the bottom of that middle column, Malta star thistle is new, similar in a lot of ways to yellow star thistles, similar issues, very sharp. very sharp flower head, unpalatable, causes problems with lips, gums, etc.
Do we have, on these ones you're listing, do we have them here in Clark County?
Neither of those two yet, no.
Okay.
Well, the jewelweed is up for debate. We have plenty of the native, but we also for sure have a hybrid between the native and one of the spotted jewelweeds. But it's really hard to tell, unless it's like policeman's helmet, which is purple and tall, or some of them that are a really striking color. Most of them are just shades of orange, and it's really kind of hard to tell if we have it or not. I'm going to say no for now, and that just because we don't know for sure we have it. But the next one, the top of the column to the right, policeman's helmet, it was on the list previously, but that's one that we asked the state to list as designated in our county, and they did that for us. And then just a few down on the right, spurge flax was a Class A weed last year, and the state moved it to a Class B weed. And I have not seen any around here. I put their written findings. It's a few pages back here, like maybe five pages back in your handout there. Mm-hmm. It talks about the spurge flax, but it seems like for now it's mostly a northeast part of the state problem. So those are the only changes from the state. And then, of course, it's open to us to make changes to, you know, the Class Cs or the Class B non-designates. Unlike last year when I had several suggestions and we reviewed them, Kent added Medusa Head, that bottom group, that bottom right group. I don't really have any suggestions for changing any of our local stuff, but obviously open for you guys to decide if you wanted to add or subtract anything.
A while back we were talking about, Holly, was it?
English Holly. That's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, and whether to add it, yeah. So did we add it or not?
No, it was attempted. It was proposed to be added to the state weed list about 3 or 4 years ago, and the state denied it because the Holly Growers Association, I don't know if that's the official term, that grow it for primarily Christmas
decoration. Yeah.
They ixnayed it, and so it didn't end up. Which is, you know, understandable, but it's well known by all the noxious weed professionals. You just don't want this stuff in your understory, and the ones that have the time and the means do try to take care of it. So it's known to be an issue, but it's just not on the list.
So how do you control it? Because I'm all of a sudden we are seeing it, you know, around the periphery, you know, not necessarily out in the fields, but we're seeing it, you know, and stuff. Basal treatments.
Yeah,
basal bark?
Yeah, if they're small enough and the bark is still green and fairly soft, the basal treatments will work well. One thing that is kind of hit and miss is the cut stump treatments. Sometimes you'll cut them, put it more of a concentrated crossbow type of a thing on there, and you get pretty good control, but not always. Sometimes it grows out of it. So what we've done a few times and it works well is the same thing that we'll do with our black locust treatments. Is just do a drill and fill. So take a portable drill, drill a hole in it, like about every 4 inches, depending how big it is, and put your concentrated herbicide in that hole that you drilled at 45. And that way the tree is not realizing that it has been wounded, like with a cut, and so it's uptaking that herbicide. We found with black locust that works really well, whereas if you cut a black locust, it'll just send up suckers and stuff all over the place. And so that is working a little bit better for English Holly.
I have a lot of it. And one of the guys I talked to that commercially sprays said when you cut it off and treat that stump, you also have to treat that tree because it's going to keep growing.
Oh, really?
I told him I've been watching this one tree for about 4 years, and I said, it's still green. He said, it'll still grow.
Really?
So you've got to treat them both stumps.
I've also seen it fall over wind or whatever and lay down and then re-root and kind of grow like a vine.
It's a runner. I got it so thick in some spots you can't even walk through.
I don't doubt. Yeah.
But like you say, I see it all over the county now along fence lines and stuff.
Can you
get something listed as the county and not the state?
We can list it as a priority in the county and have it be something that we're doing education for and doing recommended treatment for, but not enforcement. So it can be on a list of things that we are prioritizing.
Does it end up as a Class C then?
No, it would be a lower designation that's just
really even
that's
lower
just than a you know, weed of concern that we try to get people to control.
Wow.
Where is the Scotch broom coming in here? Is it the Spanish broom?
There is Spanish broom, but there Scotch broom is
a different.
Let's see, why am I not seeing it? Oh, Scotch broom is a B, but not a designate.
So it's not listed.
It's not listed here. Now we can list it, but the reason that we haven't listed it in the past is because we're not requiring that it happen because there's so much of it. It'd be like listing blackberry. But that doesn't mean that we couldn't. You guys can decide to do that, and we can try to put more effort into it. It's a matter of time.
You don't take care of it.
Oh, yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah.
I've had a couple of patches that worked on for several years. One on the east side of the farm up there coming off Kelly Hill, and then the other one's clear on the north side down in the canyon, and it's a huge patch. Seems, well, kind of crowds into the neighbor's lawn and stuff, but I did the same thing, cut them off and doctor the cut.
Yeah,
seems to catch up, but I got to wait for the whole forest to get up and choke it out. So
yeah, if you don't shade it out, the Scotch broom seed will last for 70 or 80 years.
But it takes a while staying after it and trying to find it, especially when it's just green, not the yellow flower yet.
Mm-hmm.
So
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Same with the holly. I've got that coming in on all sides of the farm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Other questions on that?
Is that so? Is that something we want to try to do more with, or are we happy with where it's at? Just being on the list, but not enforcement?
With the Scotch Broom, I mean, what do you guys think about that? It's
along the Forest Service roads, they all go out in the fall and cut it. Mm-hmm. Whether that helps or not.
Well, it's already pretty seed by that point.
Yeah.
It's a perennial, so if they're cutting it and treating it, then yeah, it's at least getting rid of the plant, mm-hmm. Which is certainly helpful.
I had a couple patches in that one I worked over, and it's pretty well gone. The other one along the fence line, I usually always get one or two every year come up. Mm-hmm. Now I'll try to basil spray it, and then I'll cut it off and spray the stump, just trying different things.
One thing that we could maybe do, and again, this is, I mean, we talked about it in the December meeting, how we just don't have enough time to get to the really high priority stuff. So even though Scotch Broom is a big deal, especially for replanting forests and that sort of thing, it's not something we're going to be able to spend a lot of time on unless we are able to get the Clark County Council to agree with the budget proposal that we're going to give them, mm-hmm. and maybe get some more people on board. But one thing that we can do, if that's the case, is try to contact the people that are getting close to DNR, getting close to the Forest Service, areas where there's small farm forestry operations, things like that, where it is a bigger deal than just say on the roadside. Then we can at least send them information, not necessarily an enforcement aspect, but at least try to get more of the word out there that it is a big deal and why it's a big deal.
Well, would that help you or hinder you in terms of asking for your budget, your new budget? Would that, by having it, then that would give you more leeway to say, well, I need more people and this is what to authorize this type of budget, or would that actually hurt you?
It's possible. I think we're so far behind as it is, it won't matter one way or another, because we can show that we've got all kinds of issues, but I mean, it wouldn't hurt.
Well, definitely something for us to keep an eye on anyway in our own places. So, between the Scotch Broom and the holly and all the rest. Okay. A couple other ones.
So how this works is that the proposals.
Yeah.
So how it works is that you guys decide if you want to add something to it like Scotch Broom. And then you discuss it, and then it's a matter of putting the motion forward and agreeing to it. So that's completely up to you guys.
But it wouldn't necessarily go on the list. All you would be doing then is just education purposes, trying to educate the public that these are two that need to be taken care of.
No, there is a difference. In the case of the English holly.
Holly we can. Yeah. Scotch Broom we can.
Is on here, okay.
Scotch Broom we can. English holly we can, yeah. So we can certainly add Scotch Broom to the list and have it be one of those that were, mm-hmm. like I said, I think realistically it wouldn't be something that we're enforcing, but at least it would be on the list. People would see it's on the list, and then we could, at the very least, do the education.
But we could enforce it for the right situation, right? I mean, it would give you the authority to enforce it if
we chose to.
Right.
Correct.
Versus right now, we can't.
Correct.
Okay, so that's the big difference between that, is that if a situation arises that we need to push enforcement, then we mm-hmm. could for Scott.
We could.
But right now we can't, so.
So I would move a motion that we list Scotch Broom as one of as an enforceable. Yeah.
Need a second?
Yeah.
Second.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so we'll add that. And then in a larger sense,
Casey, before we do, maybe we should have a vote on it.
Oh, yeah. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. We'll go ahead and we have a motion to add Scotch Broom to probably the Class C regulated, right? Is where it go?
I'll have to take a look at it again. It might be Class B non-designate, but I'll
okay,
look.
Okay, so look we'll yeah. add that to the list.
This as per what KCC determines need to be. Yeah.
Yep. We have a motion and a second. Other discussion. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Same. Okay, and then we need to adopt the entire list that's presented, Class A, B, C, along with the addition of Scott Brewer. So,
I'll make a motion.
Okay,
I'll second it.
Motion and a second to adopt the proposed 2018 noxious weed list. Other discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same. Okay. And moving along, this is board decision amendment 3, number 4. This is part of the proposed budget.
Okay.
And going to the county again.
Yeah, so in that same packet, sorry, not numbered, but if you flip through past the Spurge Flax information, you'll get to a page that looks like this. It's the first of the budget pages. There you go, that's the one that Kent has there.
Yep.
Okay, so it's at the December meeting, we talked about kind of where we're lagging. We're just not able to get to all of the eradication efforts for Class A, let alone getting into the priority bees and meadow knapweeds or anything like that. And so we're looking at, based on the December meeting, the addition of our employees to having 5 field inspectors, with each with a 3-month helper in the summer, a temporary employee helper. That's what we talked about at the meeting, and then it was also talked about that with the Class A's, we would try to do as much of the Class A weed control work as possible on people's property as long as they would let us do so. And that way we would know that our Class A's aren't going to be the next Scotch Broom or Tansy or what have you. And so it's one of those early detection, rapid response type of things. So what I have here is that discussion that was agreed upon in December, which is the first page, which is 5 field inspectors. And you can see that, and I started with the year 2019, because it's going to take that long. That's the start of the next biennium. It'll take that long to work with the BOCC, or sorry, they changed their name to County. Clark County Council. So Clark County Council. And so I put together...
She's a she now.
No, you can't.
Right.
Is that abbreviation?
Oh, you can't. Are you being serious?
I am being serious.
Well, internally. So anyway, you can see that comes to, in 2019, the first year would come to $505,000, so about $500,000. And then, since it's a biennium, we've got 2020, which would include step increases for those people we hired, and then you can see the biennium total there. And you can compare that with the table on the bottom, which is our current budget. Our current budget is about $250,000. We exceeded that, we're closer to $280,000. Or we will exceed that, closer to $280,000 this year. So you're looking at a significantly more amount of money. And so then I started thinking, what would an alternative be? So that brings you to the second page, which is similar scenario except with 4 field inspectors instead of 5. And you can see that brings it to, for 2019, $431,000 rather than the $505,000. So that gives you an idea of what one less field inspector, one less truck, and one less 3-month helper would result in. And then the next page after that, if we were to suggest an assessment, like we talked about before, it's our job to ask me, to ask the Clark County Council for the funds that we need, but it's their choice as to whether or not they want to put it together for an assessment or to take it as dedicated funds for the general fund. And so what I wanted to do is, if they were interested in assessment, is give an idea of what it would look like 10 years down the road, because that's how many step increases the typical county employee will get. So they're hired at a certain rate, and then they might get an extra 60 cents or 80 cents per year as it goes along. And so this page is to kind of project out from 2019 to 2029, and you can see from 431,000 to about 491,000. So that's how it would increase over time. So if we were to make the suggestion for an assessment and the Clark County Council agreed that that might be something they want to look at, then you would actually want to plan the assessment for that dollar value so that over time you don't have to ask for increases, if that makes sense. So there would be a little bit of surplus at the beginning, and then you would come down to having, you know, a tight budget after 10 years. So that's what that page is for. And you can see if that was the case, the biennial budget would still be under $1 million, which is, you know, it's obviously a significant amount of money. And by comparison, about a month and a half ago, there was a public meeting where the Clark Conservation District was asking for permission to have, in their case, it's not called an assessment, but it's very similar, just different term. And they were asking for $800,000 a year. And it was not, I mean, a final decision hasn't been made, but it wasn't well received. And so, although what we would hope for is 5 field inspectors to really get the job done, I'm wondering if strategically it might be better to ask for 4, and it, you know, the difference in cost, maybe there would be a strategic advantage to doing that. But on the other hand, we're kind of limiting ourselves in the beginning. So, I mean, that's kind of up for you guys' discussion.
I have 2 quick questions. One is, how would this proposed budget be compared to other counties? I
mean, right.
I have a pretty strong understanding of the eastern counties, but
right.
This is, you know, triple or quadruple a lot of those, I think.
Oh, yeah.
So what is this compared to some of those?
So I got it to Katie late, so it's not next on your thing, but if you go into this next little packet that's stapled right here, the first page is how Allison Halpern, the state weed coordinator, gave it to me. It's a little confusing, so if you skip that one to the next page that looks like this, I put it in an order that's a little bit easier to understand. So that first page is all the different weed boards and listed alphabetically. The page after that is listed by annual budget. So that kind of gets to Kent's question a little bit. You can see ours, Clark, our current budget is in brown there. Hopefully these came out in color. Yeah, in brown there. And then as you go down the line, and partly what Kent is referring to is a lot of the lower budget counties are on the east side, but not necessarily.
Right.
King is always right up there at the top.
Yeah.
So this would put us in the top 5.
If the Clark County Council were to agree to higher the 5.
Okay. Well, you know, and ironically, is I'm sorry, I'm interrupting.
No, no, it's
King, Thurston, Pierce, and Clark. I mean, out of the, you know, are all on the west side, you know, and stuff. So, yeah.
Well, it starts to get pretty interesting. So now turn the page, and now I've got them ranked by assessment.
Did you do this work, or did Casey have to put all this? Did he just tell you to get the numbers and put it all together here, or what?
I printed.
Oh, you just didn't print it. No, okay.
So in this case, it's assessment per parcel. So now it's kind of interesting because you see the counties on the east side are all at the top. And I talked to a couple of the coordinators there, and I think the main reason are fewer parcels that are larger, mm-hmm. and also more of an agricultural emphasis.
Mm-hmm.
I think the main reason there. And then you also see that, a little bit harder to read, sorry about that, but the ones in gray rather than in the black, those are actually weed districts rather than weed boards. And the weed districts were, most of them were set up earlier, and they were done specifically because of this harm to agriculture. So there's a little bit higher rates on those. Hmm. But if you go to the next page, sorry, Joe, I think this is maybe getting a little bit more to answer Kent's question, is if you look at not assessment per parcel, but the budget that they have in total to the amount of parcels that they have in the county, because these are just the counties that I was able to call around and ask, how many parcels do you have in your county? In the case of ours, we have 170,000. In the case of King, they have 700,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went through here. You'll see that the amount of money they have per parcel, in other words, per landowner, you know, the amount of money to work with, we have the least of the ones I was able to call around to currently. If we were to able to get these budgets adopted, it would be a little bit more in the middle. And then as you kind of look towards some of them with fewer parcels, like you get to Pendere, if that's how you say it, they're, you know, more than $13 per parcel. The reason I put that one in there was more because I was calling her about a big head knapweed anyway, and so we just had a discussion going. And when I was talking to Susan, the coordinator for Pendere County, we started talking a little bit about budgets, and she doesn't have an assessment, but she has two 9-month county field inspectors and two temporary employee field inspectors. So she has more than I have, and she only has one-tenth the number of
people. Yeah, 17th. Okay.
She started laughing at me. She's like, there's no way you can run a budget or a new program with 170,000 parcels on what you have. And I was like, well, that's why we've been discussing. Mm-hmm. So that's why she's on. But anyway, so that kind of gives you, there's a lot to digest there. You need to have it memorized in 10 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead. Finish your thoughts. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say that, as was pointed out, if this were to be accepted by the Clark County Council, it would put us as, you know, either the fifth or sixth ranked week board in terms of budgets. But again, not really high at all in terms of cost per parcel or cost per landowner. So it's kind of need to look at it a couple different ways. But we're a growing county. We have 170,000 parcels now, and we all know that 5 years from now there's going to be a lot more than that. So,
and just if we do move forward with that, that might be something that you want to highlight, is how much we've grown. I don't know what it was like 5 years ago in terms of parcels, but that might be, if that proves to be a positive growing number and you're extrapolating out to 5 years from now, you might want to be able to show them that.
Right.
So that way that kind of helps back up your numbers. The only other thing I would look at is that you have 11 comparisons here on this last page out of 45, 46 counties, right?
Yeah, just have a chance to call around.
And just it might be, if we do move forward, that might be beneficial to have that be closer to half or at least a quarter of them, so that way it doesn't, that way from their perspective, they're not thinking we're picking and choosing which ones look the most beneficial on that. The only other thing that jumped out at me was the, I'm not sure how you pronounce the last name, Kalel?
Oh, Justin, yeah, Kalel.
So that one seemed like a large jump in salary. That's the only one that seemed like, wow, made a big jump from what they were making to what they would
correct.
Making. And I was wondering, I noticed that there's a title change in there. Does that have anything to do with that, or?
It does, yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, if you take a look at, what Ken is referring to is one of these pages that shows the proposed budget and then the current budget in gray down below. And the reason for that large jump is that currently we have myself as coordinator, Kara Hout, who is a field inspector getting paid as under the field inspector classification.
Okay.
And then Justin Kalel, who is working as a field inspector but only being paid as a weed control technician.
Okay.
And so the proposal is to put him in the classification he deserves to be in.
Okay.
Number one. And number two, even if this budget proposal doesn't get agreed upon by the Clark County Council, it's going to happen anyway, because it's a long story, but we ended up kind of having to join the union. And now that we are unionized, he's out of class. And so the union's going to argue for him to be in the correct class anyway, so it's going to happen anyway. But that's why the big difference right there.
Okay. Yeah. And is that a valuable position to have on your staff, the weed control technician, or not so much? I'm just curious, like, if that was a position that was held, why that's not included in this budget moving forward, that you moved all of them to field inspectors instead of having any of these control technicians.
Good question. So the way that it was set up is that the when I first got hired 14-ish years ago, that all the people that were hired were either temporary employees or they were listed as field inspectors. Mm-hmm. And then about, I'm guessing here, 7 or 8 years ago, the weed control technician class was created as a way of having the ability to keep people on every year instead of losing them to other better jobs. And they're basically assistants. So the guy who runs the roadside spray truck is a field inspector. I mean, this is not part of our group, but you know, right. The other side of the office is a field inspector, and the person that rides with him that runs the switches and everything is a weed control technician.
Okay.
Or the job I had previously, which was the weed control on all the county legacy lands and undeveloped parks, is a field inspector, but the person that assists him and sometimes is in a different truck and doing other things, but is under his guidance, is a weed control technician. So it's less responsibility. The weed control technician can always say, he told me to, you know, that sort of thing.
Okay.
It's my understanding, and this was before I became the coordinator, it's my understanding from Kevin that the reason that Justin was hired as a weed control technician to do a field inspector's job is because our department director at the time wanted to keep the budget down. Mm-hmm. That department director's not here, and we're not even in that department anymore. But that's my understanding for why it was done. But if you look at the way the job classification is written, and I've looked at it recently because, like I said, of this union stuff, it's incorrect for what Justin's doing because it doesn't even list that they're the ones that have the ability to talk with the property owner about his weeds, to recommend enforcement actions. It doesn't even have all those things as part of his job description. And so for our purposes, if you have the field inspector in the truck with a temporary, like a 3-month temporary employee at a really, really busy time when you're jumping out of the truck trying to get Tansy pulled on the roadside, maybe doing more, knocking on doors, you have somebody there for security reasons. A couple of our field inspectors are female, and that, you know, it's a little bit safer and they feel more empowered to knock on the door, you know, if they have somebody with them. But that person doesn't need to be a full-time employee. It's just a helper. And so, but you do need to have a field inspector as the person in charge because they're the ones that have the authority to actually to do that work.
Okay.
So mm-hmm. that's why they split out and not really the need for a weed control technician with our program. Now, as we're going to start doing this year on a limited basis and hopefully more robustly in 2019, going out and actually doing the Class A weed control on people's property where it's the really priority weeds that it's better for us to just do it so they don't get out of control. That's where, you know, in the former situation or on the spray program side of things, not the field inspection side of things, that's what the weed control technician would be doing. But in our case, the field inspector paired with that low-cost temporary employee comes out to about the same as if you were to send 2 weed control technicians out in terms of cost. So I don't think we really need that weed control technician level on our side. Sorry for the long explanation, but there's been a lot going on.
Okay, last question, then I'll be quiet.
No, that's okay.
Are the amount of vehicles sufficient? I mean, do you need 1 or 2 more? I mean, with this temporary help, it looks like you're hamstrung by requiring that they're riding around with somebody, or can they use their own vehicles? I don't know how that works. Like, because if not, then either somebody's dropping them off and saying, hey, go cut all that, I'll be back in 2 hours, make sure it's done by the time I get back.
He's sitting under the tree for an hour.
Right. So I don't know if that's the type of help that we usually get, that they need somebody on top of them the entire time, or if you had an extra vehicle and somebody had initiative that you could send them out. I'm not trying to increase the budget too much, but just looking at it going, well, we've only got vehicles enough for full-time staff. Is that...
No, you're right on there. Thanks for pointing that out. We are hamstrung by that. And one of the reasons is the fleet, guys that purchase the new trucks and keep them maintained, and then they're not able to keep the older trucks over as rollover vehicles or as fleet loaner vehicles very much anymore because of auditing purposes. I obviously don't understand all of this, so I could be speaking out of turn slightly, but there aren't very many of the older trucks available that would be good for that. Hey, we've got an older county truck, get a couple of the temporary employees out there. We currently have 2 of those.
Okay.
I don't think I listed it here, but and they are less expensive because they're there's no longer the budget being set aside for the purchasing of a new one.
Right.
So if you look at the lower page here,
right,
down here at the lower table, and you can see that we've got three trucks that are fairly new. They're not listed that way, but you can see that the fourth one is the older one because underneath capital, there's just nothing listed there. See the bottom truck there?
Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm.
That chunk of money there, that capital, that close to $4,000, is what gets put away every year so that at the end of your 10-year cycle, they've got money for a new truck.
Right, and you're saying that there's two more potentially under those that are similar to that?
Well, we just have the one, and then we have a Jeep Cherokee that we've been able to use, but so you can't spray out of that. Right. So sometimes we'll run around if we're doing like hand pulling or just right. checking on a property or something like that. But it's hard to get those older trucks.
And the Jeep doesn't have air, so we can't use it on extremely hot days.
Yeah, it's like an oven in there. But yeah, there's a temperature requirement too. But
well, we'll move it.
So anyway, that's the thing with the,
on what your last
yeah, sure.
yeah.
yeah.
drive
yeah.
yeah. different than we do.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's the thing with the trucks, and it's
okay.
it does make it kind of limiting, but it is what it is.
I guess I would hope that there'd be a little bit better cross, you know, department help there, public works, or somebody who has a plethora of new vehicles seemingly running through, that they would be able to let us use a couple of those. But
And that's what this bottom one here is, 223. Yeah. That's what it is. Is okay. It's actually one that we've had as just a what's just called a fleet loaner. We've had it for 3 or 4 years.
Right.
I mean, it was practically rattling off the road. We got the suspension fixed and some steering. And some
is that something that I don't know if we could put that within here, that maybe they would put pressure on another department to let us get another one or two of those? I mean, or maybe you can use some of your connections with other people in your position and other departments to potentially acquire one of those. If that would help you to do your job and get this done faster, I think that would be something that I would encourage us to try to do, because it just seems like if you have two people running around in the same rig, it's probably not going to get as far.
I agree, and it's been an ongoing thing. What we have is, so this is the field inspection side of our office, and then there's what's called the county spray program, for lack of a better term, which does all the county properties.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's, you know, somebody's on vacation or out sick, or they're putting four people in a truck because they're going to some remote location or whatever, we'll borrow vehicles and that sort of thing. So we're not absolutely restricted to this. And so sometimes we have access to trucks within our own office, but in the height of the summer when we're busy, they're also busy. And so it gets pretty hard.
Okay.
But yeah, no, that's good.
Okay.
Good.
Now I'm done. Now everybody is
good. Yeah. Get a hold of Chuck and do some drug busts.
Yeah.
Grab some pickups and set a car.
Yeah.
And we get them for a while.
Yeah.
Confiscated.
Porsches.
Yeah. I also hated myself when I rolled down the window.
Actually, you know, the two brand new trucks we just got this year are rolled down crank where there's no power on at all. So for $30,000, you can't get power windows on your truck. Yeah. Pretty weird, huh?
Legit.
So don't.
That might be better for county purposes, though. Less things to go wrong.
Yeah.
Well, except for the people that sit there and I don't know how to get the window down.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a shock to us. We're like, oh, well, you know, I'm not complaining. It's a new truck, but yeah, no power.
Wow, I'm surprised that they even offer crank windows anymore. Jeez.
Those were good.
All right. A couple of things on my end is I'll throw the I've gotten so dang pessimistic on much anything around here. Is I went and testified for the conservation district, and I was really disappointed when the county commissioners came up, Clark County councilors, okay, came out and said, well, why would we want to do anything like that to help farmers and rural landowners? And I'm looking at this going, I can see the same thing, is sitting there going, why would we want to help these people out at all? So anyhow, if it isn't concrete and asphalt, by golly, they just really don't have much use for it. And so anyhow, I guess personally, Casey, I would go for the five. You might as well go for everything you can get and see if you can get it, because I just don't see, I don't care whether it's four, I don't care if it's two, I don't think you'll get it and stuff with Clark County here and stuff.
I'm hoping there's two things that might help us I mean, it's not apples to apples, but in comparison to the conservation district request. One is we're asking for less money than they were. They were asking for $800,000. Ours is closer to $500,000. And then, three things that can help us. The second is ours is a state mandate. We are required, if a county has even one Class A or Class B designate weed in it, we are required to have a weed board. And we are required to eradicate those Class A weeds. And so it's an unfunded mandate, but it is a mandate.
Right.
And so that's the second thing. Whereas
so that's nothing says that Clark County's going to fund it.
And then the third thing is that may help us in comparison to the conservation district is theirs needed to be it's not called a tax, but it's right. called an assessment. Rates and fees, I think theirs is called.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Theirs was required to go that route. Whereas in our case, we're the ones asking the Clark County Council, but they can choose to either do the assessment, which in their mind would be, I mean, it's a tax, or to fund it out of general fund. So it doesn't have to be the same route that the Clark Council did.
Or they can just turn it down. That's the third option.
They can, well, yeah, fourth yeah. option. I'm sure the three positive ones.
Huh?
I'm sure the three positive things.
Okay, all right, yeah. Yeah,
he's not going to give them a fourth option.
Yeah. So the other question I had, Casey, was you had 170,000 lots. Is that just in the county area, or does that include the city and the cities and everything too?
All parcels within
the county, including cities and everything.
Correct. It's. I mean, noxious weed control is oftentimes mistakenly looked at as just a problem in agriculture, and that's the area where it can do the most economic harm. But there's also a lot of weeds that are a big problem in urban areas, everything from poison hemlock for its toxic properties to some of them that are just really aggressive for landscapes. One that we don't go after here, but is an example of one that can be really destructive in urban areas is Tree of Heaven. I mean, it sprouts like crazy, it seeds like crazy, it rips up sidewalks, you know. Japanese knotweed does that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the urban area, the noxious weed issues in urban areas are a big deal. It's oftentimes something that we spend less time in because we just don't have time. Mm-hmm. Now, let's see.
Okay, but the conservation district was the same thing.
Yeah.
Was taken and saying, look, it's not just an agricultural issue. The conservation district does a lot of work inside the city and one thing or another too.
Stormwater.
And they didn't buy it either. So yeah.
In case this is something you'll do an actual pitch, or are you just giving them the budget and they're approving or not, or do you get 10-15 minutes and chat with them, or how does that work?
Yeah, both. So what we would do is based on the recommendation that you guys have, which will be the request, is we'll send the year-end report, and then separately, but kind of, you know, linked, we'll send a letter from you guys that is the request.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Clark County Council will then schedule a work session, I believe is what it's called, for us to go and present this information, present our case and why we need the money, and then they'll ask questions and that sort of thing. It's still not a public meeting necessarily. Mm-hmm. I mean, public can come, but it's not an invitation for public meeting. And then they'll kind of decide where to go from there. So it's both a written request and a almost certainly we'll get some FaceTime.
Okay.
Good. So to go with the massive amounts of spreadsheets I just gave you, if you then look at the these couple of maps that I've got in here. So the first one is, there's a lot of stuff today. So the first one, this is our current field inspector districts, which are different than your weed board districts. So ours are split up a little bit more for purposes of having, say, one field. I don't want one city like Battleground to have to talk to two different field inspectors.
You know, that's what I'm going for. I guess I got to turn it the way Casey has it. I guess, okay.
Mm-hmm. I see.
It's further forward.
Now it's one.
One more.
Okay, he's messing with
you. Oh, there it is.
Two. Yeah, yeah. Two fold.
There you go.
There we got it.
One more.
Okay. All right.
We're just trying to keep Jerry honest.
Keep the
well, no, you're keeping me straight too. Here, okay. Because right. Casey, you were holding it one way. I'm looking at another. And,
sorry.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Gotcha.
Okay.
Right.
So that's current. Now you have District 1 in blue. That's currently Justin. So you can see that obviously not in a given day. You're trying not to do as much driving as possible, but he's going all the way from the railroad tracks near Vancouver Lake all the way to the highlands above Washougal. And then, up into the Camp Bonneville, Livingston Mountain area. Kara in the Central District in pink, she's got, Salmon Creek all the way up through Ridgefield, all the way over to Battleground, Hawkinson, Ventersburg. And then the North District, which is Sia, this year she's a temporary employee. She has everything above the East Fork, including the portions of the center that kind of come over towards I-5. So... And then green is me. Yeah. So as the coordinator, most of the stuff in green are government entities or in the case of there's a couple of large private land holdings around the refuge there. So
both sides? You get the and that.
Yeah,
because, oh, and that little corner down there, huh?
Yeah, that's Steigerwald Refuge, yeah. Huh. So in this case, most of mine is coordination. I mean, as a county weed coordinator, we do have the ability to enforce and compel strongly, the state agencies to do their thing. Like in the case of the East Side, a lot of that's DNR. In the case of federal, it's more of just a working relationship. We don't have the right to force federal. So Richfield Refuge and Steigerwald is more of a cooperative. I'll let them know what they have. They get out and do it. And they actually have been doing quite a good job the last few years. So that's what we have now. And then if we were to go to a proposal where there's four field inspectors, not five, but four, we have the this next map, which I basically just took a Sharpie and was going over what I would like it to be. So you have the previous map and then hopefully well-defined in black. And so the reason I split it up this way is, again, trying to make the district so that they're more manageable and we can have more one-on-one contact with landowners, and then also making sure we're not messing up the relationship between the field inspector and the city, like their city public works type group. So you can see that down here, this would be Justin. So it's essentially...
Okay. So yeah, you've got
see the black? See the black?
Okay. Not the colors, but okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So just look. So the one down here in the south, west-ish, would be Justin. It's essentially City of Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And then going up into Lower Salmon Creek. And then you've got Kara would basically slide over, no longer Hawkinson, Ventersburg type area, but still with Battleground. And that's the majority of our...
She's incredibly busy.
Tansy and our wheat-free forage is kind of in that western part. And then the new person would be the east side of those two areas. So they would be Camas, Washougal, Livingston Mountain area, getting up into Hawkinson, Ventersburg. And then the north district would not change in this scenario. It's just geographically cut off by the East Fork in terms of being... reasonable with, how far a person can go. So that's the four field inspector scenario. Bill was talking about, we may want to ask for a five field inspector scenario in which we would be able to, whittle that down even further. So that's pretty much I have what I've done so far in terms of your direction from the December meeting. Any thoughts on kind of that second map I was looking at for the four field inspector scenario there? Okay.
I like it.
Yeah, looks like it would work.
Okay.
So,
that's all I have.
In relation to item 5, the proposal from the board.
Yeah, so which
budget? Bill's already indicated 5.
Yeah, Bill's got a vote of 5, but you can change it if you want after my last little bit.
Yeah. I'm with Bill that it would. Just ask for it all, and
okay.
And fight for that as much as we can. And
well, if you ask for 4, you're not going to get 5. That's
nope,
for sure.
Nope, yeah. nope.
That's what you think would be allow you to be most successful.
I think really where it would be, and I've mentioned it, but I haven't really described how it would work, and what I'd like to do in the next week board meeting is go over it in more detail, but this the proposal that you guys agreed upon, that for us doing a lot of that Class A or high priority Class B weed control for the people, and the reason for it is that weed control is the most successful and the least expensive when an infestation first is introduced to an area. I mean, you see that on your farms. It's a very well-known principle. And what's happening right now is we're so busy that we're seeing that Class A weed, and we're sending educational information to that property owner. Let's say half of them don't respond, and then next comes the enforcement letter,
the warning letter.
Spacing on it right now. The enforcement letter, and let's say half of those people respond. So in total, you've got a quarter of the people, but that by the end of that year, didn't do their Class A weed control on that particular weed, right? Well, now all that seed is produced and all that has happened, and now over time it builds and sometimes builds quickly. Whereas if we, who know what we're looking for, know how to do the weed control, know the proper timing and all that kind of stuff, can say, hey, just sign this agreement that says we can do it on your property, we'll just do it for you. It's actually going to require a couple of more help, work, you know, more trucks and more people, but it will actually be much less expensive and much more successful in the long run. So I'll talk about it more next time. But I think that the five field inspector scenario will make that thing that we're trying to do that's the most reasonable amount of people that we need for that rather than the four. But the four may be more realistic. I mean, it's hard to say. It's up to you guys.
One drawback to this, and you know, I mean, we're stuck with it, I guess you could say, is, you know, you talk about these infestations getting started and clipping them in the head and everything and stuff, is when you sit there or one of us as a property owner sit there and look at the neighbor's place and go, hey, you know, there's a weed infestation over in the neighbor's place, but since you can't see it, you know, and you sit right there and you go, great, it just sits there and grows and grows and grows,
yeah,
and really gets started before it ever gets to a point where you can do something about it or whatever. Yeah,
right. Yeah, good point. And there's actually some evidence based on different grant projects I've done in the past where it was essentially a smaller version of what I'm trying to do on a larger scale, where a little bit of money from the state, and we did the same thing. Hey, I see that you have this. If you sign this agreement that lets me do the weed control. So then we're on their property doing the weed control, and now I am seeing the neighbor behind them. Mm-hmm. And so now I can contact them and say, hey, I noticed you also have this Class A weed. We can do the weed control for you. And so it actually is a way for us to get away from just only the county roads and actually be able to see more. Mm-hmm. It's not going to work for the really common, you know, tansies of the world, because we're not going to be doing that control for them. That's way too much. So mm-hmm. we're still going to have that issue where only the people we see are doing their tansy control, but the people that we don't see aren't. It's not going to work in that case. But if we can do it for the Class A's, where the people are starting to have a more of a cooperative, friendly relationship with us because we're doing it for them, and we can, while we're out there, we can talk about the benefits of it. And now we're seeing that neighbor we didn't see before. Maybe we'll have a lot more people that understand the importance of this weed control, rather than right now where it's just a lot of people that are upset that we're telling them what to do. And we're still going to do that. I mean, they're still going to be telling them what to do for the more common weeds, but mm-hmm. at least that can kind of balance it out, and we'll get a little bit more support and see some of those areas we don't see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Do we want to vote on it, or just, well, you guys, I guess we need to anyway.
Need to have a motion, yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, I'll move that we authorize Casey to introduce a budget proposal for five.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Okay. All right.
I'll second.
Motion and a second to move forward with five-person budget. Other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same? All right. Mm-hmm. We'll seek out the wisdom of the counselors.
Okay.
All right. Now I guess We've got to have some kind of training.
I'll make this as...
We have to watch a movie?
Yes. So, Allison Halpern, our state weed board coordinator, sent out an email. It was actually at the end of last summer. And let us know that all the weed boards need to take the Open Public Meetings Act training. And there's actually four videos. The only one that really, in my opinion, would be required for you is this one, which is only less than 17 minutes, lucky for you. I watched one the other day. It was about an hour long. It was all about the requirements of the paperwork and if people make a public information request and all that kind of stuff. Since you guys wouldn't actually have to do that, unless I'm hurting your feelings and you want to watch it, I skip that part.
But only if you have popcorn.
Yeah.
There are more donuts. So yeah. This is the part that really just has to do with what we do at these weed board meetings and what constitutes an official meeting and things like that. So if you guys would like, I'll
mm-hmm.
help.
Yep.
To make sure the sound worked.
Hi, I'm Washington State Attorney General Bob Ferguson. Joining me in this video is our Open Government Assistant Attorney General, Nancy Greer. This training video provides an overview of the Open Public Meetings Act for both the general public and for public agencies. It is intended to provide a greater understanding of the legal requirements of this important act.
Can you guys hear?
The Open Public Meetings Act is a law passed by the people of the state of Washington in 1971, at the time of a nationwide effort to make government affairs more accessible and government more responsive. The purpose of the act is to provide the public access to information concerning the conduct of state and local government. The law is based on the principle that open government is essential to a free society. The act provided the people of our state the opportunity to witness the deliberations and the decisions of their government. State and local agencies, such as school boards, city and county councils, and state commissions, must comply with the Open Public Meetings Act. Actions and deliberations of these governing bodies must be conducted openly. Meetings subject to the Act must be open to the public, gavel to gavel, unless a law permits a meeting or part of the meeting to be closed. Thank you so much for watching, and I hope you find this training informative.
This training presentation is based on the Open Public Meetings Act. The OPMA is in RCW 42.30. This training video contains 15 short segments. The Attorney General just discussed segment 1, the history, intent, and purpose of the Act. In the remaining segments, we will cover scope of the OPMA, what is the governing body, what is a meeting, what is action, what is final action, travel and gathering, regular meetings, special meetings, executive sessions, public attendance and comment, minutes, liability, other laws, and additional resources. The Act has several clear requirements, and compliance with them is improved with training. Training can mean the difference between complying with the law and expensive litigation. The Act applies to governing bodies of multi-member public agencies, both state and local. Public agency includes A, any state board, commission, committee, department, educational institution, or other state agency which is created by or pursuant to statute other than the courts and the legislature. B, any county, city, school district, special purpose district, or other municipal corporation or political subdivision of the state of Washington. C, any sub-agency of a public agency which is created by or pursuant to statute, ordinance, or other legislative act, including but not limited to planning commissions, library or park boards, commissions, and agencies. And D, any policy group whose membership includes representatives of publicly owned utilities formed by or pursuant to the Washington laws when meeting together or on behalf of participants who have contracted for the output of generating plants being planned or built by an operating agency. In some cases, an entity which is not an agency can still be subject to the Act when it is the functional equivalent of a public agency. This determination depends on whether it performs a government function, receives government funding, the extent of government involvement or regulation, and whether the entity was created by government. Examples of public agencies subject to the Act include city councils, county councils, school boards, fire district boards, and state commissions. Agencies governed by an individual, such as a single director, are not subject to the Act. Some activities of public agencies are not subject to the OPMA. They include certain licensing and permitting activities, quasi-judicial matters, matters governed by the Washington State Administrative Procedure Act, APA, and certain collective bargaining activities. All meetings of the governing body of a public agency shall be open and public, and all persons shall be permitted to attend any meeting of the governing body of a public agency, except as otherwise provided in the OPMA. A governing body is defined as the multi-member board, commission, committee, council, or other policy or rulemaking body of a public agency, or any committee thereof, when the committee acts on behalf of the governing body, conducts hearings, or takes testimony or public comment. Meeting means meetings at which action is taken. Physical presence of the members is not required. A meeting can occur by phone, or in some cases, by email. I will talk more about email exchanges later in this video. A meeting does not need to be titled meeting. The OPMA also applies to retreats, workshops, and study sessions. A meeting does not occur if there is not a quorum. Both actions and final actions are subject to the OPMA. Action means the transaction of the official business of a public agency by a governing body, including but not limited to receipt of public testimony, deliberations, discussions, considerations, reviews, evaluations, and final actions. Final action means a collective, positive, or negative decision, or an actual vote by a majority of the members of the governing body when sitting as a body or entity upon a motion, proposal, resolution, order, or ordinance. Final actions must occur in public. Secret ballots are not allowed. A majority of the members of the governing body may travel together or gather for purposes other than a regular meeting or special meeting, so long as no action is taken. And remember, action includes discussion of agency business. This means a quorum of members can travel to a meeting together, or they can gather at a public or private event, such as a festival or social function, so long as they do not collectively discuss agency business or matters. Regular meetings are recurring meetings held in accordance with a periodic schedule by ordinance, resolution, bylaws, or other rule. State agencies file the notice of regular meetings each year with the Office of the Code Revisor. Regular meeting agendas are to be posted online on an agency's website 24 hours in advance, unless the agency does not have a website, or if it employs fewer than 10 full-time equivalent employees. Special meetings are meetings that are not regular meetings, called by the presiding officer or a majority of the members. This means they are meetings not on a fixed schedule, such as on a day different than the regularly scheduled meetings. Certain notice requirements apply to special meetings. For example, 24-hour advance written notice must be provided to members of the governing body unless waived, provided to local newspapers, radio, and TV stations that have a request on file, posted on the agency's website if the agency has a website, unless other exceptions apply for agencies with few staff, and prominently displayed at the main entrance and the meeting site. The notice must specify the time, place, and business to be transacted. There is an exception to the notice requirements for emergency special meetings. Those are meetings involving injury or damage to persons or property, or the likelihood of injury or damage, or time requirements make notice impractical and increase likelihood of injury or damage. Under the OPMA, an executive session is a part of a regular or special meeting that is closed to the public for the limited purposes listed in the OPMA. The grounds for holding an executive session are narrowly construed. The purpose of the executive session and the time it will end must be publicly announced before excluding the public, and the time can be extended by further announcement. Examples of purposes include certain real estate discussions, reviewing negotiations on publicly bid contracts under certain conditions, evaluating the qualifications of an applicant for public employment, and meeting with legal counsel regarding enforcement actions, litigation, or potential litigation. The OPMA provides a list of authorized executive session purposes at RCW 42.30.110. In addition, a public agency can have a closed meeting to discuss matters not subject to the OPMA, such as deliberating on a quasi-judicial matter. Other laws may provide additional procedures or authority for particular meetings or hearings, or for particular agencies. An agency must carefully follow the law when meeting in an executive or closed session. For example, when meeting in an executive session under the OPMA to discuss agency enforcement actions, litigation, or potential litigation, there are three requirements. First, legal counsel representing the agency must be present. Second, the purpose is to discuss an agency enforcement action, litigation, or potential litigation to which the agency, governing body, or a member acting in an official capacity is a party or is likely to become a party. And finally, public knowledge regarding the discussion is likely to result in an adverse legal or financial consequence to the agency. Remember, an agency can discuss only those matters in an executive session under the OPMA that it has told the public it would discuss. The members cannot talk about other topics in that executive session. As we discussed, all meetings of the governing body of a public agency shall be open and public, and all persons shall be permitted to attend any meeting of the governing body of a public agency, except as otherwise provided in the OPMA. An agency also cannot place conditions on attendance, such as requiring persons to register their names or fill out a questionnaire before attending. As noted, email or phone call discussions among members of a governing body can be a meeting under the OPMA. But the purpose of the OPMA is to permit the public to attend and observe agency meetings. So when the public is unable to attend email or phone call discussions that are meetings under the OPMA, the Act has been violated. For example, it is generally agreed that the members can meet via a teleconference call so long as, one, any public notice procedures are satisfied, and two, an agency sets up a process for the public to attend, such as having a speakerphone available at the agency's official meeting location, so the public can hear the discussion. In contrast, since an email exchange among a quorum of members of a governing body is not open to the public, such an exchange in which action takes place is a meeting that would violate the OPMA. And remember again, action is broadly defined. Those email exchanges do not comply with public notice and attendance requirements for regular or special meetings. The OPMA does not include a requirement that public agencies allow public comment. Nevertheless, many public agencies do permit some public comment period at a meeting, such as at the beginning of a meeting. Agencies can put reasonable procedures in place to allow for public comment, and the OPMA has procedures for dealing with disruptions when the orderly conduct of the meeting is unfeasible. The minutes of all regular and special meetings, except executive sessions of such boards, commissions, agencies, or authorities, shall be promptly recorded, and such records shall be open to public inspection. That law does not require any specific format for minutes. That law also does not require an audio or video recording of a meeting, although many agencies make such recordings. We have advised that the minutes should, at a minimum, recite the significant actions of the agency. Violations of the OPMA can result in a lawsuit against an agency and its members. A court can impose a $500 civil penalty as personal liability against each member who attends a meeting in known violation of the OPMA, and a $1,000 penalty for a subsequent knowing violation. A court can declare any action taken at a meeting not held in compliance with the OPMA null and void. And a court will award costs and attorney's fees to a successful party seeking a remedy under the OPMA. To recap, this presentation covers the highlights of the Open Public Meetings Act. Public agencies may be subject to other laws governing other particular meeting or hearing procedures or governing particular agencies. And the laws concerning agency meetings and hearings can also be amended from time to time. Therefore, agencies are cautioned to be mindful of all the current laws concerning their meeting and hearing procedures.
Thanks for participating in the Attorney General's Open Government Training. For more information, there are resources available for agencies to receive training and technical assistance for compliance.
All right, I can certainly understand if there's plenty of coffee, if anybody needs to refuel after that. I can even bring it around if you want.
Nope.
I don't think, having looked at that a couple of weeks ago, I'm not aware of anything that we're doing that would violate any of the ideas that they're talking about here. We post the meetings, we have a set schedule, the public's always welcome, we have minutes, we then post the minutes, the agenda is posted ahead of time. All decisions that you guys make or made here, sometimes we'll send emails back and forth, but it has more to do with schedule. Hey, we're doing this, we're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Let me think. Oh, even last year when you decided to have knee surgery during one of our meetings, we had it.
Look at the doctor's schedule.
Yeah. We had to
take some time off and play.
Yeah. We had you on speakerphone, but the meeting the meeting was posted. The other two people were here to make it a quorum. It was, you know, so I'm not aware of anything that we're doing that is in violation of this, but it's just a training that we're supposed to provide, and they recommend, you know, doing a refresher every few years or whatever. So. And I can understand it. I mean, it makes a little bit more sense looking at, like, the Clark County Council or the State Weed Board when they have their meetings, why some things are set up the way they are, and that kind of explains it a little bit better.
We've had the public in the past and allowed them to speak. We haven't set any parameters, so to speak. We haven't had public stop in and make some comments or request some information. So.
And they're always welcome. We'll occasionally have people who, usually if they're upset, sometimes if they want to give us kudos and they ask if they want to come to the meeting, I said, sure. And they don't usually come. I mean, people are busy and that sort of thing. But we always say that they can.
Okay.
It was interesting, the idea of the emails and one thing and another. Because I don't know if it was necessarily a government body, but I've seen others that did business by emails. And, yeah. So, anyhow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Item 7, urine report, the pretty one.
Okay, yeah, so that's the report here. As I was telling Katie this morning that I trimmed it down to 95 pages. I was feeling pretty good about myself. We are not going to read that all now. Please take it home with you.
Oh, okay.
If you need help sleeping, you're thinking about, you know, concerned about the precip and how much, when you're going to get your crops in, you can look at this. But just some highlights. That is a picture I took on the front. That was where I did some purple loosestrife biocontrol releases down where Burbridge Creek gets close to Moncur Lake. So on the second page here, this is where we'll put just a little couple of paragraphs when we send this to the Clark County Council. So I'll write up something and send it to you guys in an email and just see if that's okay, and then we'll have your signatures there. The state weed law says that we should provide a report to you once a year, and that you can provide a report to the governing body as well. So we'll go ahead and, we haven't been doing that in the past, so we'll go ahead and just start doing that. Let's see,
question.
Did somebody say that?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just some highlights. You guys' names are there, which is good. And your districts. Let's see, looking at the context, I was going to flip through to a couple things. Let's go to page 71. So a lot of the meat of this, probably about half, is... actually, let's go ahead and look at one just for fun. Let's go to page 47, just because I randomly flipped to that one. So page 47 is, this will just give an example of what a lot of the meat of this is. So it's a policeman's helmet. It's under the section of Class B designates. It tells you what it is. There's a description and a photo. It gives a table here of the locations that we have it. So 2017 policeman's helmet, you can see a little table there. I eliminated all of the potential, I eliminated all of the details of who the person is. So there's no name and specific address. So it just has location in terms of, you know, is it in Vancouver, is it in Ridgefield, that sort of thing. What we did, you know, in this case, some of them got a warning letter, some of them were just surveys, some of them got a violation letter. And then whether or not they were compliant, did they actually do the control that we asked them to? So for every one of, so for the 9 Class A weeds we have, and there's, I can't remember how many of the Class Bs and stuff I put in here, there's this information. And then there's a map included for all of them. You can see the yellow dot there, that's where the weed is actually in the county. So you can, like I said, peruse through all of those. And then all of them, or nearly all of them, will have some sort of a table that says what our integrated weed management strategy is for them. I don't have them for all of them, I ran out of time. But anyway, so that's what a lot of the meat of it is. And then if we go back to page 71, did I say 71 before?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the few pages previous to 71 are some of the things that we did for the year. Page 71 and a few pages after that are what I gave to you guys last year as planned improvements. So those are in black, the same wording that I had. And then in brown there are my answers or my updates to what actually ended up happening. So there's a few pages of that. And then if we get to page 76, 76 through 78, this is what we talked about at the December meeting, and I pretty much, you know, put it down on paper. So the first paragraph says, hey, this is what we're going to do. It's a little bit different. And then it gets into what the work plan is. I wanted you to look at what I put together as a mission statement and objectives there, because obviously that's something that you guys can change there, your mission statement and objectives. I just put them down on paper, and I can alter those how you would like. Basically, in the objectives part, there's 3 main things. You know, do a quality job. The second little paragraph there is how we go about the education enforcement. And then the third one is, you know, about collaboration. We work with different weed management entities and that sort of thing. And then in the next page, page 77, is the actual work plan. This talks about what we discussed in the December meeting, the idea of requesting sufficient funds for 5 field inspectors. And then this, the bottom half there talks about the Class A weeds that I feel, after doing a bit of an analysis and a little bit of guesswork, that we would be able to do on our own on people's property. So, for example, Big Head Knapweed, it's only on 2 parcels, and we can probably get after it there. False Brome, there's a significant amount on Camp Bonneville that other people in our office are working at, but there's only a couple other than that. If you look at Garlic Mustard, the third one there, we're going to target it just in the rural areas where it's starting to get up into the woods, because it's a huge problem as a forest understory weed. But if you look down into B there, we're not going to do any in the main urban area because there's just too much of it. This is one of the weeds that we asked the state weed board about having reclassified for us, and they said that they wanted to keep it as an A. So it's still an A in our county. As you know, an A means we're required to eradicate it, and that's going to be tough with garlic mustard. The other ones on here are possible. But I didn't include egg leaf spurge as one of them we would work on because we honestly don't know enough about it. We're finding it in quite a few places. We may have more than we realize. I didn't include milk thistle because there's a fair amount of it, and it's going to be more of a, we're going to just ask them to do it on their own like normal. And then rice field bulrush is only on two different government sites, so it's not something we need to get after. Anyway, that's in writing what we were discussing in December. And then the next page, page 78, it's really hard to read. You're going to need a magnifying glass. But Katie put a slightly larger one in that other packet for you. This kind of gives you an idea of when we're doing what. So, you know, when are we actually doing the garlic mustard treatments? When are we actually doing this? When is the fair? You know, the main items there. Like I said, that didn't turn out quite well enough there. But and then after that, it gets into, well, there's a reminder page for me that I didn't finish. You'll see that on page 80. Mm-hmm. Stuff I didn't get in there, I'll do that in the next couple weeks. And then 81 shows the different attachments. So, you know, the weed-free letter we did last year, the Class A letter, examples of the violation and warning letters, things that you guys are familiar with, but I figure it would be a good idea to have in there for once it gets to the Clark County Council to kind of see what some of the stuff that you put out. So that's it in a nutshell. I can certainly add, or please don't say subtract, because I did a lot of work on that, but I can certainly add anything you would like in here, aside from those yellow ones that I said I hadn't finished yet. And then, like I said, the very first page or the second page, the first page of text, we'll put a couple of paragraphs of, you know, you telling the Clark County Council that, you know, that you're giving it to them. And I've got your names listed there, and what we'll do before we leave today is if you guys can sign this copy of it, and I think if we can do it right, then Katie can take that and we'll make sure that it ends up on the version that goes to the...
She'll just use it on our credit cards and everything else. And,
You know, that's a good point. When I first did this last year, I actually wrote my signature the way I do it all the time. And then in 2017, I thought, you know, that's probably not a good idea. And so I actually have a fake signature I use now that goes to the public. So you can fake it if you want. That's totally fine.
That's work.
So anyway, that's 95 pages in a nutshell.
Okay.
What I hope to do is, well, what I'm going to do is at the end of every year, I'll just add to this. And, you know, maybe in future editions, maybe we don't have to have, you know, so much detail about each of the weeds. And I can just say, hey, you know, refer to the 2017 version or whatever. And we don't have to kill a tree every time. But
well, I was going to say, you put quite a bit of work into trying to put this all together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. So is there, obviously you don't know everything in there, but if you guys do read through this and you do have something you want me to add, let me know. And I'll do a finalized version of this in the next couple of weeks. And then what we'll do is we'll give this to the Clark County Council at the same time we send them the budget request. And so I actually put those down, Jerry, if you want to look at those action items, those are the two items I put down for me to do, but I can also add, you know, whatever you guys want.
Mm-hmm.
We took care of five. So seven, we just need to approve the board report at this point.
Right.
Plus any additional that you do, and then you want us to sign that before we leave today.
Yeah, if we all sign this copy, I think we can get it so that it looks good on the copy we give to the Clark County Council.
Okay.
I'll get a hold of Lee and get a signature from him. So.
Okay.
One thing I have a comment, nothing really serious, but anyhow, we talked to some people. They bought certified weed-free straw, put it on their garden. They happened to be at our store. They were just incensed that stuff was growing out of it. And what is could possibly be growing? It's certified weed-free, all this stuff. And my son Joe happened to be there, and Joe goes, "Well, is it wheat?" And they go, well, I don't know. There's nothing supposed to grow. And he goes, it's probably wheat seed that came through in the straw. And, you know, but they were just incensed that they had bought this certified weed-free straw and didn't realize that the combine's not going to necessarily get out every single seed. Yeah.
There's also two other points to that. One is, it's only certified weed-free for the weeds that we care about.
The noxious
weeds. There could be all kinds of other stuff growing there. And then the other one is, there's always the caveat that it's a best effort.
Right.
So the certification is that it was a best effort. The certification isn't that it's actually 100% weed-free.
Yeah.
So it's the best we can do, and it's I think for the most part.
Or there was something there before they put it down.
Then that's really impossible too. Yeah, but anyhow, try to convince them that and everything and stuff. Yeah,
no, we do need to discuss about the next meeting date.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Did you guys answer the?
Nobody. Well, I only got replies back from two people.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And everyone else was just like, no, that data doesn't work. No, that data doesn't work. No, that data doesn't work.
Well, let's take care of item 7 first. Do we want to motion a second to approve
the year-end report?
The year-end report to go to the council?
I'll make the motion.
Okay.
Second.
Motion and a second to adopt the year-end report. Approve it and sign it.
Okay.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say aye. Okay. Now, next meeting, and I don't have, do you know what was proposed real quick? No?
I do on my calendar here, just a second.
February, March.
So I believe it's May. Let me see if I'm
right. I got April 2nd.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Is that right?
April 2nd was a proposed one. Yeah. Okay.
Now, we had an email a while back. They were changing one of the dates. Which one was it? Or they wanted to change one.
We're all going to stare at Katie.
No.
And I don't remember which one it was.
So are we on then for April 2nd? Or is that definite, or is it, are we still?
That's good for me.
Okay.
It's good for everybody here.
Do you know if there was a person that didn't have April 2nd as an option?
I don't remember.
Well, we'll go with April 2nd, and we'll post it in the newspapers and on the website as required. And then if there are changes that are needed, we can always just make those changes and do an update. So
we'll probably be here then again?
B1.
We
always try.
The larger one with the restroom. That's the one we try to get.
And 9 o'clock again.
9 o'clock, yeah.
Okay.
And then we try it again for July 2nd.
July 2nd?
Yeah. I'm wondering if that's the one. I didn't see the replies, but I'm wondering if that's the one that people might not be able to do because it's so close to Independence Day, or I don't know. I mean, I'll be here.
I thought it was a December meeting, but...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, I wasn't involved in the email responses and stuff. Normally, we just have the four meetings, and the last meeting we normally have the first Monday in December. But this year, since both Kent and Randy the position is back open. You guys are hopefully want to reapply, but it's open to the public. Then that has to take place earlier. So we're going to do, I think it's either the first week of November. And the reason for that is the timeline. So there needs to be X amount of time after we announce it. Then it has to be the new person or the returning people have to be approved by us in our weed board meeting, and then there needs to be X amount of time for the Clark County Council to do the final approval. And
so you'd move that December meeting to November 5th?
Correct.
Okay.
Monday, November 5th. Yeah, good catch, Randy. That's probably the one you were thinking of in that email. Yeah.
And then July 2nd.
So,
and July 2nd, okay.
Mm-hmm. So check your calendars if you need to at home, ask the better half or whatever, and then, like I said, we'll post the meeting schedule and the 2018 Clark County weed list online and in the newspapers here in the next few weeks.
And I'll email you guys the schedule today, too.
Okay.
Good.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Anything else from the board?
I have a couple, three things, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Is we talked last meeting about the road signs, the idea of having road signs. Anything going forward on that, Casey?
Yeah, so I looked into it a little bit. I was looking online, politicalroadsigns.com or whatever the site was. It got a general idea of what it would cost for the sign and the some sort of a bracket or labeling or whatever for it. It's about $4 a sign. I was thinking about getting about 100 of them. And then I was talking with, I don't know if we got it in there, but
Camden,
who's one of the people in the, that does some of our messaging, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. So that noxious weed sign, she's doing that for us for our fair display. And
it has better color than that.
It'll be like the three board display.
Oh, okay.
And she was asking if there's anything else, and I was saying, well, wouldn't mind doing one for like maybe the Weed Free Forage, and then one on, you know, new weeds in the area or something. Have a look. We've been kind of just hodgepodging it together for a decade, and just kind of having it nicer looking. And then she asked if there was any other signs, and I mentioned these road signs, and that I was going to probably purchase them online. She says, oh, we can design them for you. So I'm not sure if that will change the cost or make it better, but I think what she wants to do is, about 2 months ago, the county decided that, and I've violated this rule on this report because it's just to the weed board, but anything that the county puts out is supposed to have a certain look to it now.
We have a visual style guide.
Yeah, the header needs to have a certain look, and this has a certain look. So even things like presentations at the fair and everything, and just so it's more cohesive looking, is my understanding. And so possibly she wants those roadside signs to also have a certain look. But I'll find out more about it. But we're going to go. It's out of my hands.
Okay.
We're going to go through with that. I think it's a good idea. I've talked to a couple of people. You know, just citizens that have called and said, hey, you know, I've got such and such weed, and hey, by the way, what's the deal with Tansy? And I've told them about this plan that Weed Board's put together, and everybody's been positive about it so far. They think it's a good idea. So,
Question two, the State Weed Board sent me a letter for nominations. I guess I was going to open it up here. Reading through it, apparently a person has to be nominated by the weed board, the local weed board. Is that correct? It's not citizens at large. It has to be one of the members of the weed board.
That's my understanding.
Yeah. So I was going to open it up. I would be interested. Now, the only thing is, I tried calling this woman. All I could get was an answering machine, and I never could get her to call back. So I was trying to find out what the commitment is, how often they meet, one thing or another else.
At the state level?
Is yeah. Yeah.
To be honest, I've only listened in on maybe three of those state meetings, just you know, over the phone or over the computer. I attended one at I was going to attend one at our coordinators conference last year, but the state people didn't make it because of all the snow. But I don't know a lot about how often they meet, so I don't really have a good answer for that. I know that our area, the about five or so counties that are our area,
yeah.
Six counties. The person that was on the state weed board was a person that had been a long time member of the Cowlitz County weed board. He's just choosing not to do it anymore. And so it was, nobody else had signed up to it by the end of the year, so that's why there's kind of this special election. From emails that I've heard so far, there's a person on this Skamania County board that is showing some interest, and a person who actually works for Department of Natural Resources. I actually worked with her when I got a grant from them to do purple loosestrife control, Carol Peening, if I'm saying that right. So I don't know if it's because she works for a state entity that she's involved, or maybe she also is on her weed board too. I'm not positive.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the two people that I'm aware of, and then yourself. And so I don't have off the top of my head the cutoff date for that.
February 2nd or something, rather.
Yeah, but
yeah.
If interested, definitely we can nominate you or whatever.
Yeah.
You guys can't stop my choice.
You're showing an interest.
It's interesting. I'd like to see what they do. Yeah. So, anyhow, okay.
Any objections? Nope.
No.
Okay.
Feel free to put your name in or make contact.
Well, somebody else has to do it.
Oh.
Yeah.
You fill it out and I'll sign it.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. I thought it was interesting was it has an opening date and a closing date. You can't submit a deal before the opening date, but it has to be in before the closing date.
Well, there you go. That's why you didn't get a call back.
Yeah.
It was before the opening.
No, this was just the other day. The other thing I had was, has anything else ever come of Victor Blomquist?
No, he was invited. Well, we didn't invite him to this meeting because I haven't spoken to him.
I think it was the last meeting.
He was invited to the December one and didn't come. As far as I'm aware, I talked to Councillor Bolt. He popped by the office a few weeks ago to just say hi and see how people were doing. And he brought him up, but he said Victor hadn't called him lately either.
Oh, so Victor called him too then. Okay.
Oh, in the summer several times.
Oh, yeah.
But not in the winter. He's hibernating, I guess.
Yes, that's what I would say.
No, I do. I don't disagree with Victor's stance.
I know, like I said last time. I was on the phone with him and we went through this thing. I don't know how many times, five, six times, the same deal, and I'm going, Victor, you know, we've been through this. I can't, you know. Anyhow. Well, and I, Jerry knows him from AGCO, and I know him from dealing with him and one thing and another else, and oh, man, yeah.
Well, maybe this, I mean, not specifically Victor, but in general, the people that call our office, like probably any state entity or county entity or any business, really, you're not usually going to get the calls from people that are happy with what you're doing. You're going to get the calls from people that were upset, and that's pretty normal. I don't call somebody that I owe, you know, I don't call the phone company unless there's something wrong, right? So we get a lot of calls on Tansy in the middle of the summer. What I'm hoping is this idea that you guys approved with a final cutoff date that to be determined, but let's say the cutoff date for Tansy ends up being July 25th. And if, you know, we've got these signs out there that say that's what it is, we've got it on the website, we've got it in the paper, or hopefully the papers will pick it up, I guess it's their choice. And everybody knows, hey, people who don't have their Tansy control by July 25th are going to get fined. Now what we're going to do is only do that for people who already know, not the first timers. You know, we're trying to work with the first timers, mm-hmm. but it's going to be the repeat offenders. And so hopefully the people that call in, we can say, hey, you know, we understand that this has been a problem and this is what we're doing now. And that way they can see that we are serious about it. And at the same time, maybe we'll start also getting the appreciation from the people who have been upset at us for what they think is not doing our jobs. So we'll get calls that say, hey, we're not doing our job, or why are you making me do my weed control? So almost all the calls we get are negative. And so hopefully this will show, as well as our Class A efforts, that, hey, we are trying to work with the community. It's not just weed control. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Well, we could take at least one or two up there close to Victor and put them in and...
That would be a good stretch. In fact, a nice stretch there.
Yeah. You guys don't know Victor Blomquist, I take it.
He's been there a long time, south of Hawkinson. His family 182nd Avenue.
182nd, yeah.
And he's just...
South of Hawkinson.
He just wants people to control their tansy. Like I said,
Well, he had a point, that he was out there and cleaned up his, you know, tansy and one thing and another, made sure it was picked. But then here just across the fence was this guy, and it's in a position you couldn't see it.
And it's not a pretty flower.
Huh? Yeah.
And it's not a pretty flower.
He's adamant about the people.
People think it is. Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right.
Yeah. Okay.
So you'll fill out your letter.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to three questions, anything else?
Yep. Yep. Thank you. Right.
Thanks for the donuts and the coffee.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sorry, we went 15 minutes over time, but we had a lot today.
Sure. I didn't know we had a time limit. And we've settled the next board meeting, so more than good. I'll adjourn the meeting.
Okay.
And, I'll second. I'll send out the minutes. Katie will do that, but. The letter, when I actually do write the letter that's going to the Clark County Council with the request for the spines all